guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, we hope he's the immediate impact player he has been. I think we've identified that playing on that second line with David would be a boost to our hockey club, and we need it to be. He's looking forward to the challenge, and hopefully we get to where we want to here in the next little while. But we've got a tough stretch ahead of us in March, and we're going to need everybody in the depth side of it to continue to move forward in a direction that we hope to.
It's just going to be hard. Again, when you look at the deals across the league and what's facing the Bruins, if they advance in the postseason, if they get past Toronto, tough matchup to begin with. But if you got Tampa staring on the other side, Tampa's been wire-to-wire the best team in the league all year. Tampa's better than you. And they added Ryan McDonagh today. So even if Rick Nash works out, even if they're playing well, I don't know what their shelf life is in the postseason. They got a tough road ahead of them. If it's Tampa in the second, and then if you advance there, is it Washington or Pittsburgh? That's Pork City, man. So I think they got a tough road either way. But we'll see how this Rick Nash thing works out. It's hard not to be excited about it, though, if you're a Bruins fan. They viewed themselves as a cup contender, and they went out and acted accordingly. And who would have thought they would have been in that position? All right, so that's on the table with J.D. Martinez, the Rob Gronkowski stuff, the goalie interference stuff if you want, whatever you want. Jim and Beverly, lead us off this hour. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, what do you say, Mike? Hey, I agree with you on Cassidy, man. It's refreshing. Everything, I love it. Hey, Eric Carlson's name was floated around over the weekend. So I'm just wondering, what do you think? And Murray, you don't have to answer because you'll probably already know. Do you give up McAvoy to get Carlson? I would.
No way.
So I would not.
No way.
I would not, because you're getting 5, 6, 7 years old. I don't know how old Carlson is, but you're getting older there. And Eric Carlson is about to be the highest paid player in the league, or he's going to be second to McDavid at worst. You can get away with paying McAvoy. I mean, McAvoy's going to bend you over and spank you when it comes to his contract, but he ain't going to be the second highest paid player in the league. So McAvoy's younger and more affordable. Now, I don't know if he'll be the player Carlson is, but I'm not doing that. Because that changes your whole team. It changes your whole, everything that you've done to this point. Changes everything. I don't do that.
No, I
don't. Carlson's 28. He'll be 28 in May.
He's 6 years, 7 years older.
I mean, what's McAvoy, 20 or 21? I mean, whatever it is.
I think it's 21, but whatever. Either way.
I mean, it's just, you know, to me, there's no way I'm doing that. McAvoy's not perfect, by the way. The more you watch him, he's not perfect. He's got to shoot more, man.
Well, he can't generate offense from the point. He can do it off the rush, and he's good, again, off the rush. But when he's got it at the point, like, he can't even get a shot through half the time.
No, and the other thing is, it feels like he takes some stupid penalties. He took one the other night. I mean, I know he spun around, but he got a stick stuck between the guy's legs, and it got him into a 5-on-3, and that hurt him in that Toronto game, and he's done that before, too.
Well, so he's still young. Still young and developing. Dakota and Braintree told us about the J.D. Martinez injury on Friday, except you said it was a knee, Dakota. Turns out it's a foot?
Well, yeah. I mean, don't forget, I did mention the change in spikes that he did last year as part of it. So in either word, it was about the language in the contract. It was spot on, 100% in the money. And what amazes me...
Hold on. It wasn't 100% in the money. See, this is where you damage yourself. Why don't you just acknowledge that it wasn't 100%, it was like 75%, which is good. I'll take it.
I'll take 75. Dakota, take the 75.
Take the 75.
I'll take the 75.
Good.
What amazes me is, Mike, right, is I don't work in the media, I'm not working the beat on any of these sports, but I can get information when people give it to me and decipher it. And are these people that are being paid to do the job, like it was with the Farrell fight that I reported on with David Price last year, that the only one mentioned any reference to it was Buckley, that he said there may have been an altercation, right?
Right.
The Red Sox, every sport has these people, their beat writers, columnists, whoever, at this leash, and you cannot get unbiased reporting anymore in the world. It's just impossible. So I'm telling anybody out there want to give me some information because the beat writers won't do it? Find me on Twitter, find me on Facebook, find me whatever. I'm easy to find, okay? Because I'll put it out there because I don't owe anything to any of the sports teams in Boston or anybody in the country.
Okay, so thank God we have Dakota and Braintree. That's all I have to say.
No, I know. Yeah, Woodward and Braintree. That's I was worried about that.
But that being said, the press conferences have become embarrassing. Like, the reporters just play along with this coronation thing, like this PR thing, as opposed to, you know, here's your opportunity to really pepper them with some questions to find out what really was going on there. and no one takes him up on that opportunity.
No, nothing. Now, look, some of the quotes will pop up later on. Like, you know, I'm seeing some of the comments now by Boris to writers that are there about, well, the Liz Frank injury, and he's very specific about it. Why this is not done in front of cameras is beyond me.
Because I don't think that these reporters want to ruin the moment for the team. You know, why'd you take over a press conference with questions about that guy's ankle? And then they have to hear about it from the team. Yeah. Don't you think that's what that is?
Maybe. But at that point, I would say, I called you three times last week to ask you about it, and you lied to me. So I'm going to ask you about it here, because apparently you have a problem with telling the truth.
It's just not that's the way it used to be, Maz. It's not the way it is anymore.
It blows me away that this is the way it happens now. And again, look, you made the point earlier. It's one thing to get scolded by the members of the media. Oh, no, how dare you ask that question? How about just common sense? They brought the guy in on Monday. It took him a week to announce the deal. He was having physicals or getting examined for how many days? It takes that long for a physical? Use your brain, for crying out loud.
Okay, so all that being said, whether it was properly reported or not, how much of a concern is it to you?
Not huge, because I mean...
I put it on the list.
Yeah, but it's not a big thing to me, because they knew it was there, and it's a protection thing now.
They didn't know it was there. It's why it took five extra days.
I'm starting to wonder about that.
Oh, like, what do you mean?
Like, as I was reading some of the stories on it, it's consistent with what they did with so many other guys, and they said, Larry's not there anymore. Maybe it wasn't Larry. Maybe it was John Henry. Maybe it's always John Henry. Maybe as a, you know, they...
Okay,
they,
so fine. But either way, if they had known, they didn't know until they started to really dig in on day one. If you want a conspiracy theory, Maz, here's a conspiracy theory. The announcement of it. When did the announcement come?
It came after they had that little thing saying, hey, we're done, we're happy with the team.
It was Friday night, wasn't it? Or it was Thursday night. It was the night of John Henry's picnic table press conference, which was a disaster. It was Henry and Warner, and they were all defensive and squirrely. And no, we like our team. And what do you mean? We made big changes. I don't know what you're talking about. Look at our staff, and we're happy with our team. I think when we change our approach, that we're going to get what you're looking for. And Henry got rightfully ripped for it.
I mean, it was last Sunday, I think.
Whatever day it was, it was sort of a bizarre defensive thing, and it didn't look good. And then poof, that night, we've signed JD Martinez. Did they rush the announcement or the leak of the news because they wanted to wash out that bad press conference?
It's an interesting theory.
And what the last 5-6 days was just their normal due diligence that would happen before they announced the signing. But because they've become so ridiculously anal about PR that they wanted to change the headline after that bad press conference by John Henry. And so they leaked the news that night.
So it's an interesting theory. I still come back to the original injury, which happened what? 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
So it concerns me because it's an injury. And I don't care about the contract. They protected themselves on the contract. Good for them. But that Liz Frank thing is no joke.
No, it isn't. But I'm telling you that they knew that it was there. They had to know a long time ago. They've had the guy's medicals for how many weeks and months? Like, and so now they had to examine him in person to know that it was there? Like, I just sent
him up to Boston. Did you hear that?
I know, to see a specialist, I'm assuming. That's another one I love. You know, Dombrowski talked about this during the press conference today. They asked him, you know, why did it take so long? Well, we had to send him up to Boston. Yeah, to see a specialist because you saw something in his foot. That's why you sent him to Boston. Like, you make it sound like it's a routine part of the physical. You know, we didn't have doctors that were here. Of course not. Do you have a specialist for every part of the human body in camp?
The Sox have really gotten hypersensitive, man. Like, it's weird. It's weird why it's gotten so bad.
They were trying to make excuses today for lying to people, and I don't doubt that they lied to people about it. Right, no, there's no issue here. At the same time, if you're covering that team, how do you still take them at their word? How do you do that over and over again?
Because it's easier.
It's just... Somebody somewhere is going to ask the question now, other than to Alex Cora, what'd you think of Chris Sale tonight? Like, really? I understand everybody wants a soundbite in the quote. I want information. That's what I want. I want information. This one really pissed me off to no end.
The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. You're listening to Felger and Mass.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, Love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Mojo, any chance Gronk does some WWE after his career?
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Come
really?
On now.
Can he be?
I don't know, I can't speak for him.
Can he be whatever WrestleMania he Royal Rumble champion?
I don't know, it takes a lot to go into that, but Robbie G is the man, and I don't put anything past him.
Right.
Look, his career speaks for itself.
Am I like nuts? I thought there was a manager in the old WWE with the bowler hat.
Yeah, Mr. Fuji. I said it earlier.
You said he was a wrestler.
Maz did, not me.
Oh, Fuji became a manager, right?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, see, I remember he was a wrestler, Mario.
Yeah, he was a great tag team wrestler.
Yeah, with Toru Tanaka.
Okay, yes. So he was both.
Tag team champion.
I see. And then he became a manager.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. So this sounds like Mr. Fuji. What'd you say?
Mr. Fuji.
Yeah, Mr. Fuji.
Foresee your own future, control your own temptations, and your destiny will not just be reached, it'll just be starting.
He became an actor, too, by the way. I think he was in Bond movies.
I'm telling you, and Stu, you really know this crap.
Ish.
A year at the Developmental League in Memphis. Couple years on
it's
the...
It's now in Orlando.
Okay. A year at the Developmental Academy. The WWE Developmental Academy.
Where the Steward School.
Where they really teach you how to do steroids. You thought you knew how to do steroids, and they say to you, you'd have no clue. So you get to Orlando. It's the Developmental the Developmental Academy in Orlando for a year. Then he goes out on the circuit, and you're saying that there's a million guys who weren't ready to go year one, but by year three, legit character, legit acting chops, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I think so. But if you want to, we talked about this off the air. Bill Goldberg is probably the ceiling for Rob Gronkowski. He was trained in WCW, and after like 3 months, they started putting him on the road. And then after 3 months after that, so 6 months,
so
really,
who was
they
Bob
started
Goldberg?
Him in matches on TV.
He was an NFL player.
Atlanta Falcons offensive lineman, I believe, played with Deion Sanders.
Name was Bob Goldberg, then he just became Goldberg.
Bill Goldberg.
Bill Goldberg, and just became Goldberg.
Yep.
Which, I again, is my favorite personal wrestling name ever. Just, you know, Goldberg. You just don't think, you know, Hulk Hogan, Goldberg, whatever. Best name ever.
No Mike skills, just put him in the ring, and he just would tackle people, and they gave him a finishing move called the jackhammer, which is you put him in a front face lock, you pick him up where his body's parallel to yours, and you just slam him in a body slam position. It would be a three count, and that was his match. 30 seconds in and out.
How much did Goldberg make during his prime in wrestling?
I think his first year was probably about $100,000, but he probably peaked somewhere around $5 million, $6 million.
That's right. He didn't talk much, right? All he did was
he
blow
didn't
the
talk for like a year.
He blew the smoke out of his nose. That was
or he pushed Mean Gene out of the way because he didn't want to talk to him.
What about that Undertaker guy? He didn't talk either, did he?
Not for a while.
So anyway,
Love or Paul Bearer.
I think this stuff is real with Gronk. I do. I just think it's real, and I think the Pats have to take it seriously. And I think they're in a pickle because I think they've committed to Brady and they're all in on Brady. And what Brady wants, Brady gets right now. He has to. You traded the future. You traded the next kid, so you really maximize. You have to make the most of what you got with Brady for the next couple of years. Have to. Now it's no longer a cliche. You have to maximize the Brady window because you fully committed to him. So now you have to do it, which means you got to pay Gronkowski, man. And the smart business play might be to say, well, Rob, see if you can get your money somewhere else if someone else wants to pay you. Trade him for a first-round pick and help reset the rebuild. But you can't do that now because Brady don't want him to go anywhere, and you shouldn't. I mean, you should want Brady with Gronkowski. So you gotta overpay to keep Rob Gronkowski. I think that's what they're going to be forced to do.
Can you imagine if you get an ad tight end to list now, too?
Ugh. And all these other off-brand Gronks that are out there, please, no, I don't want them. Tyler Eifert, who's broken, Jimmy Graham, like, no one is him. He's the best tight end ever. And so they should rip up, and I know that's going to, it's a tough pill for them to swallow, but rip up the deal and say, you know what, we're going to pay you close to Antonio Brown and A.J. Green and Julio Jones because he's worth that money.
I mean, that's what they should do. See, I'm already coming to the conclusion, though, they have no choice but to go get, you know, what's his name? Bennett and Eifert.
Bennett.
Like, you know, you're going to end up having to get two
Bennett.
Of them.
Bennett. Give me a break. Let me give you one more NFL thing. Oh, we have this...
Jerry Jones thing?
The Jerry Jones thing. What is that? Quickly.
All right, so this was from the New York Times. Roger Goodell is prepared to fine Cowboys owner Jerry Jones millions of dollars for his efforts to derail the negotiations to renew Goodell's contract and for his outspoken defense of Ezekiel Elliott. And this is all supported by the owners, apparently.
Of course. Now this is the owners circling back and trying to pork Jerry Jones. It's all these billionaires running around behind each other's back, using Goodell in the middle to try and screw each other over.
Well, you knew this was going to come, though. Huh. Again, after Jones really started kicking up the dirt and the dust, all of a sudden that video came out of him making jokes at that wedding, and then that was the last we heard of Jerry Jones for a
sure
while.
Sure was, that's right. So there's that, and then there was this. In the Globe, oh, we have breaking news. Go ahead.
This is breaking sports news.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You want that thing hit liberally, right?
I do.
All right. Rob Gronkowski, official Twitter account, just tweeted a minute ago, there are no limits, with many exclamation points and an emphasis on the no. There are no limits. Fill in the blank there, fellas. No limits to what he can do with his life. No limits to what he can be in the WWE.
Feels like a wrestling tagline.
No Ooh. Limits to the amount of money I can make outside of the NFL.
Oh, now you're getting closer.
So,
see, I think it's something along the lines of, here's what I want. And the Patriots say, well, look, you know, we have limits. Ah! There are no limits!
Jimmy?
So the WWE in 13 days has a pay-per-view event called Fastlane. And the tagline is, there are no limits.
Is that right?
Oh.
Wow, oh, boy.
This is why we have our sources on the ground in the wrestling community back there. You've just nailed. Thank you.
What's the event again?
It's called Fastlane.
Fastlane.
And one of the taglines is called, there are no limits.
This is all wrestling crap. I'm telling you, this is real. It's real. And if you don't pay them or find a team that will, and if you find a team that will, you're still losing the player. If you don't pay him here, he ain't going to be here. And I still don't know. Even if you come up contractually, I still don't know if he stays. I think he's got a real thing waiting for him on the other side. And this is it. So this is all wrestling stuff. Brilliant, Stu.
Patriots trade Garoppolo. They lose to the Eagles. And Gronk goes to Fastlane. Like, wow, what a beating. Oh, don't even get me going. If they lose Gronk, they're porked.
So, you know, here's one thing that should give you hope. And that is, if Gronkowski's really walking away, what are you waiting for? Just do it. Like, why are you, you know, what should give you hope that he's just playing a game here is that, well, he looks like he's playing a game with these cryptic tweets, and still, if he's retiring and going to the WWE, well, let's just come out and retire and go to the WWE. End it. Retire. Why are you playing these games? So that should give you hope that there's a number, that there's a price at which he'll return. But I think if you don't hit that number, he ain't going to return.
I mean, if I were Gronk, he made 10.5 this past year, and 5.5 of it was in incentives.
Right.
Right? If I'm him, I want 15. I'm going 15. I'm sorry. I get 8, you know, guaranteed or whatever it is next season, and then after that, I want 14, 15 to stay or I'm out.
Real quick, Ben Volen wrote something interesting in the Boston Globe on Sunday about Brandon Cooks. And he said, one of the things the Patriots have to do this offseason, list of things to do, try and get Brandon Cooks to agree to a contract extension, and if not, release him. So sign him to an extension. If he doesn't agree to the extension, cut him. He says that Cooks had a nice season in 2017. He also had the lowest catch percentage of the team's wide receivers, was non-existent on third down, had trouble getting on the same page as Brady, didn't fight for the ball, showed no physicality, and lacks football awareness, as was perfectly demonstrated in the Super Bowl with his two baffling and costly runs. As you can tell, writes Volen, I am not the biggest fan. Cooks was good value for the Patriots last year at $1.57 million. He's terrible value this year at $8.5 million, which is more than Julian Edelman and Chris Hogan will make combined. If the Patriots value Edelman at 4.1, there's no way they value Cooks at 8.5. Cooks' contract, which is the fifth-year option for first-round picks, has zero dead money before becoming fully guaranteed on March 14th. It gives the Patriots a prime opportunity over the next 2 weeks to play around with the numbers without a cash or salary cap penalty. They should try to sign Cooks to a 2 or 3 year extension to lower his cap hit for this year. But if the offense didn't skip a beat without Cooks in the Super Bowl, and the Patriots already have Edelman, Hogan, Philip Dorsett, Malcolm Mitchell, and Kenny Britt, plus Danny Amendola in waiting, if Cooks is unwilling to sign an extension, the Patriots should simply release him and move on, even after giving up the 32nd overall pick last year. Your thoughts, Murray?
Well, why not trade him? I feel like there's another option.
So
there.
Volen was on Beadle and Zoe today and said he left that out, that was a mistake. He should absolutely consider the option to trade him.
Yeah, so that is what I would explore, because I agree with him 100% in the assessment of the player. I'm good, and I would hope that they wouldn't extend him, because I don't think that's really going to change. I mean, sure, he can get a little bit more on the same page as Brady, But on third down, the inability to fight through coverage, like, I don't think that that's going to change with this player.
Okay, I definitely do not extend him. I need to see more. I definitely don't cut him, because you gave up a first-round pick last year. You can't just pee those away. Come on. Like, and he's not a total zero. He's not useless. And I like the way he showed at the end of the year. The Super Bowl was bizarre. I agree with Ben. That was a nuts run that he got his clock cleaned, and that was just, you know, what were you doing on the end of round? The Schmenzer run, as to call it. Like, I'm just going to stick my Schmenzer in the guy's face and hope to pick up a first down. Like, what are you doing? Weird. But against Jacksonville, he was really good. I liked, even though he dropped a touchdown, yeah, I thought everything else, he looked good. He was coming back to the ball. He was running the routes the way they want to run the routes. Like, I liked, I thought he showed well at the end of the year. So I'm willing to give him a second year, but I'm not giving him an extension until I see more. I'm not cutting him. Now, trade? Tell me what the trade is. And I came up with one off the air. Jarvis Landry is going to be franchised here in Miami.
I'm in.
Oh, I'd do that tonight.
Straight up, Brandon Cooks for Jarvis Landry.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. I'd do that in a second. In a second.
So Miami, do it. Miami gets, you know, they're going to lose Landry anyway. So I get 1 year of Brandon Cooks at $8.5 million. They don't lose Landry for nothing. You'd have to sign Landry or, you know, pay him the contract, the franchise number, which I don't know if they would do. But either way, I don't know. Cooks for Landry.
Yeah, I'd even take a third and a fourth rounder for him.
Oh, you would?
Yep.
Oh, I wouldn't. Yeah. No.
More picks.
No.
Give me more picks.
He's worth more than a third and a fourth. Would you take a second for him, Maz?
For Cooks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Come on.
I would.
Why?
Because
why do you want to do that?
Because I don't think you're getting anything better. I don't.
No, but why not just get a good year out of the player?
Okay, so look, I mean, I'm not opposed to keeping him for one more year. I'm not giving him more money, though. I'd rather pay him $8.5 million for 1 year and wait it out and see what it looks like than give him some sort of extension to, you know, minimize the cap hit.
Okay, those are your football thoughts. Rick Nash, JD Martinez, Rob Gronkowski, this on the table with your calls, I promise, right after the update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, I wanted to respond to JD Martinez. I believe that the Red Sox made their announcement because Eric Hosmer was signed a couple days before, and that set the rate for a big slugger. And I think the Boris and the Red Sox, or Boris, knew that the Hosmer arrangement or contract wasn't favorable for Martinez, so they wanted to quickly agree with the Red Sox.
So why didn't they do it the next day? You said they waited 2-3 days later?
2 days, I think. It was 2 days
after. Okay, the Martinez announcement came hours after John Henry left the picnic tables in Fort Myers in what was a pretty disastrous press conference. I'm sorry, I draw the line between that they were trying to cover they were trying to change the headline on what was a really bizarre, sensitive, defensive press conference from Henry and Warner and those guys at the picnic tables in Fort Myers.
I mean, it's not a bad theory. Martinez came into camp, though, the next day, didn't he?
So?
So, I mean, why would he come into camp if the deal wasn't out there already? You follow me? In other words, if they were still 3 or 4 days away from...
I'm saying they jumped the gun on the leak. That they jumped the gun on... They didn't like, announce it, but they let everybody know about it. And I think maybe if they weren't trying to change the PR or change the headline, that they would have done all this stuff before they announced it. They would have had physicals or medicals and gone through all this stuff, and we wouldn't even have known about it. They just would have announced it.
I know, but again, he came into camp... In other words, you know, when people saw him, he had to be on his way to camp already. Like, I don't know that they would have orchestrated it like that. Look, I'm open to any theory. Don't get me wrong. I don't know what the hell happened here. Okay, and I'm just starting to wonder. I don't doubt that they saw something on an exam that they didn't like. Clearly that happened. I'm just saying, I wonder if they sort of, you know, when you really look at the way they've tweaked guys whom they've signed after the fact and then had to put language into contracts. Why has it happened so many times even after Larry's gone now?
So you're saying...
I'm saying Henry's got to have a hand in that. It's got to be a Henry thing.
Sean and Revere on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I like the signing with JD Martinez, and I think that whatever the issue is, I don't think it's too major because you would never seen the deal get done to begin with. What I do want to talk about is I think we have a serious problem with the pitching staff. Not a serious problem, but we have to be concerned. I mean, right now, we don't have a fifth starter. And you got Wright and Rodriguez, the same thing as last year. They're injured, and you have to wonder, are they going to be okay with a bad knee? Both of them have bad knees, am I right?
Okay, Sean, so let me just stop you. I'm not worried about the. I think their staff is the strength of the team, and the if they're going to do anything, they're the reason why. We're talking about their fifth and sixth starter.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the rotation either. I mean, I'm eager to see how it plays out with Sale here at the beginning there. I have some questions I want to see. But if they're, you know, the strength of the team is the top two or three starters.
Or I'm saying fourth and fifth starter, I guess. I mean, Sale, Price, Porcello. Who's fourth?
Eduardo Rodriguez.
Okay, so he's not going to start the year. And then is Wright the fifth man?
That's the way I would go, yes. Okay, oh, Pomerantz.
Yes, Pomerantz. So we're talking in Eduardo Rodriguez and David Wright, your fifth and sixth starter. That has you worried?
No, they're okay there.
Do you know what kind of good shape you're in if that's what your concern is?
No, they're okay there. I'm not worried about maybe the depth of starting pitching, but if you have a couple of injuries there, you're probably porked anyway.
All right, meanwhile, going over highlights of today's press conference, you enjoyed Scott Boras's stint today at the podium, Matt?
I just think that every time Boras opens his mouth, it puts me to sleep. It's just completely full of crap. So he was asked a question today at the press conference and started out like this.
Well, I'm not sure tough is the word. It's really these negotiations are
so
more
should
of a
stop. We should stop. I should tell you what the question was. He was asked
was this a tough negotiation?
Yes, was this a tough negotiation? Go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure tough is the word. It's really these negotiations are more of a cooperative venture because you're dealing with medical, legal. The idea that the goal is common, very mutual.
Common goal.
We all wanted to execute an agreement that we all thought was in the best interest for both JD and the Red Sox. Dave and I have known one another a long time. And we've gotten to know each other a lot better over the last 5 days.
The idea
of it is really is clarity. You really have to go through every step of this and be very clear so that each of the parties understand the dynamics of you know what is clear medically, what is clear legally, and that process took its course, and there was good faith intent throughout of it. It was not an adversarial process. No. It was a process of understanding. So through that, we were able to come to an accord.
Accord.
It was a process of understanding. Yeah,
blah, 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 blah. I told you, it's like every time I hear this guy talk, it takes a million words to get to the point. A million words. And
it's a cooperative venture.
Oh, my God, it's a cooperative venture. It is. And it's, you know, it's the medical, the legal, spiritual. There are a number of elements.
He is a blowhard, huh?
These are complicated, intricate.
It's a process. It's a process of understanding.
High level discussions, and there is, you know, you are required to both speak and listen intently, Michael. And there is a certain amount of interaction that takes place in these sorts of things, and it's a very delicate, complex. Shut up! Good God, shut up! Shut up! Just shut up! Stop talking! Oh! It drives me, and again, I'm sorry. I've heard it too many times. And it drives me absolutely bonkers. Great. Absolutely freaking bonkers. Like, oh! Stop! Please, just stop! Intricate, they're intricate. Discussions.
It's a cooperative venture.
It is, because we are interested, when we're speaking of medical matters, particularly involving extremities, metatarsals, ligaments, bones, tendons, all sorts of... the human body in and of itself is a elaborate puzzle, really, if you will. Shut up! My God, he is. He's a complete freaking blowhard. Good God, the guy had a bad foot. We had to redo the deal. Thank you, done. Bye. End of story. Like, holy crap. Seems like pulling teeth, isn't it?
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Final question.
A lot of people were thinking that the Bruins were going to be really in a tussle for a wild card spot. There's a 20-point gap between third and fourth in the Atlantic Division, and the playoffs seem almost assured at this point. Is this team ahead of schedule, and that did that change your agenda?
Well, we got a lot of runway. As I said, we got a lot of games in front of us, and we need to be better. This is probably as critical openly as I've been in the last little while about our hockey club. I didn't like our two periods last night. I don't like our first period tonight. So we've got a lot of work to do in front of us. But I do believe the team, the way they've played in the body of work, suggests that we will get out of it. We will play better, and they deserve the opportunity because to have some additions here. And as I said, we were target specific. We certainly didn't want to take away from the fabric of our team and our younger players that were currently on our team and players we think will be a building block for our club. But we wanted in some way to reward the body of work so far.
I think they in some ways made the deal for the right reasons. Again, I don't know. I think if you were to give them the truth serum or a polygraph and ask them, and you ask Sweeney and you ask Neely, do you think this team's going to win the cup? They would tell you probably not. No, I mean, we're realistic about where we are. Which is why I sort of look at the Nash deal. You instinctively would say, well, then why do the Nash deal? And I think it's because he owes it to the veteran guys on that team in particular. Like, you don't owe anything to DeBrusk. You don't owe anything to that guy. You know, you owe very little to McAvoy, in fact. Guys like that. But what about the guys like Bergeron and Chara and even Krejci to a degree? The guys who've been around, who you won a cup here, have had to grind through this whole rebuild over the last couple of years with teams that they knew weren't going to win. And then you're having a good year, and you're going to do nothing for them at the deadline? Like, I think you owe it to those guys. And I'm typically someone who says, don't do anything long-term stupid, and I think Sweeney had a balance here. That's all. He had to balance the long-term goals and needs of the team, which were to protect some of their better young players, which I think they did. And at the same time, give him a half-decent shot in the spring and see what it looks like. So, I think he did that.
It's an exciting trade for the Bruins and their fans. You should be excited. I don't know if it's a good trade because I have questions about Rick Nash. He's been a disappointment pretty much all along his entire career. I mean, so much is expected of the guy, probably unfairly. But that's what happens when you have his size, his ability, his skill set, and get drafted number one overall. And pretty much, he's never really lived up to it. He's never won a cup. He's only been to one final. He's been in the league 15, 16 years. He's only made the playoffs 6 of those years. And so he's sort of viewed as like a Joe Thornton type, which is someone who did not reach his full potential or just did not accomplish what he should have accomplished. So he's disappointed a lot of people along the way, and I don't know why you would be any different. So I have reservations about the player. I think the give on the part of the Bruins was substantial. I think they gave up substantial pieces. But, it's exciting. It's a team that feels are on the cusp of a cup run, and they acted accordingly. Who would have thought that we'd be in that sort of position this year?
Amazing.
That's tremendous. So they're a year ahead of themselves or 2 years ahead of themselves. They're here on the cusp of the President's Trophy. They look at their team and say, we've got a real shot. And they act accordingly.
So when you heard that they were involved with Nash on Saturday,
I said it's not going to fall. It's going to fall through. Someone else is going to come in, and they're not going to get him.
Right. I see. I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it.
I believed it. I just didn't think they're not going to close this. This is Rick Nash. So this is no small. This is a big deal. This is one of the big stars of the game over the last decade and a half. Rick Nash. This is not Lee Stepniak here. This is like an elite. This is royalty. This guy's been on Team Canada a couple of years with those gold medals. I mean, you make that Team Canada gold medal team, the Olympic team, like you are, that's it. That's NHL royalty. And he's a little long in the tooth. He's 33, but he's not that far removed from his, he scored 40 a couple of years ago.
He scored a goal against the Bruins the last time they played down there where he came out of the
dominant
corner. Oh, he picked the side of the net like nobody's business.
Okay, so and I even saw snippets of it last night. Guys bouncing off of him, A-framing guys behind the net. Just the combination of size and speed and the hands.
He almost had a snipe last night, but it hit the post.
He cranked the post off his back foot, off a feed from Krejci, and I just... So even last night, I'm like, ooh, boy, he makes you so much better than you are with Ryan Spooner. The ceiling is so much higher, it's not even funny. And he's such a more complete player than Ryan Spooner and compliments Krejci so much better and fills out your lines so much better, it's not even funny. It's just, you gave away a lot. And he's someone who has just, in his career, been bound to disappoint. So I'm not doing backflips. I'm just telling you, pretty cool to be a Bruins fan or a Bruins follower and for them to be in this position to make that kind of trade. I mean, you never could have seen that. I couldn't. I thought the season was over four games in.
So Saturday night when I heard it, I said I didn't believe it. I believed the report that the Bruins were engaged on Nash. Fine. And then I think the report that came out said they were front runners. And I went, oh, this is just the Rangers dangling him out there to get something more from someone else. The Bruins aren't getting Rick Nash. I'm like, no shot. There's no way this happens. 24 hours later, boom. Here, and not only that, he's in Buffalo playing. Like, to me, I was floored by the move.
Okay, so that's on the table. Gronkowski's on the table. J.D. Martinez on the table. Jim in Manchester's been waiting to talk about Rick Nash. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I just think, it's just my opinion. I think Rick Nash, don't get me wrong, he's a good player, but he's not a real grinder. He doesn't really contest for the puck. He's lost a couple steps. And I just don't think he's the perfect fit. A guy like Evander Kane would have been a much better pick.
See, he's too much of a wild card, Evander Kane. So, look, one of the things the Bruins talked a lot about last week was chemistry, or 2 weeks ago, in some of their conversations leading up to the deadline. Like, well, we don't want to mess with chemistry. We got a good thing going. Then you go and you trade for Evander Kane would totally risk the chemistry because Evander Kane's kind of nuts. But even Rick Nash. Rick Nash is the big swinging stick, as I said last night on TV. He's the highest paid player. He walks in as the highest paid player on your team. Former first overall pick. Franchise guy. Like, he seems like a good guy. Seems like a good three zone player. Like, he's not some total diva. But this ain't another grinder that you're putting in here. This is the man. Can I give you just a little one? And this, I don't want to make too big of a deal of this, but I was interested to read this.
Yeah, by the way, quickly, what does it say about the chemistry if they're willing to dump Spooner?
See, I think Spooner leaving or staying has nothing to do with the chemistry.
No, but my point is they clearly didn't regard him as some sort of integral part of the room.
No, and I mean, I think he was fine in the room. I just think Nash is such a massive upgrade from him. It's sort of silly to talk about chemistry, and I thought they were silly to talk about chemistry a couple weeks ago. I mean, are the Penguins worried about chemistry with Derek Brassard? Are the Lightning worried about chemistry with Ryan McDonough? Like, trades happen at the deadline all the time for teams that go on and go deep in the playoffs. You should, if the player's good and it works on the ice, don't worry about the chemistry. But this is just a little something, a little nugget that caught my eye. This is Joe McDonald in the Boston Sports Journal, Greg Bedard's fine site. Give it a look. Give it a subscription. Boston Sports Journal. Joe McDonald wrote the headline, "Questions Still Surround Bruins Comer Rick Nash." And here was the lead to his column. "Maybe it's an old-school mentality," writes Joe, "but when a player is traded to a new team, he should arrive at the rink carrying his own bag and sticks. It would be a sign to his new teammates that he's here to work. But when Rick Nash arrived at the KeyBank Center to join the Boston Bruins in Buffalo yesterday, members of the equipment staff carried his hockey bag and sticks into the rink." Said it would have been pretty badass if Nash had walked into the visitors' locker room with his Rangers bag over his shoulder and sticks in his hand to make his presence felt with authority. No doubt it would have caught the attention of the players on this Bruins team, and they would have liked him for it. And Joe doesn't, and I left some stuff out of there, and Joe doesn't make too big of a deal. He says it's easily just could have been the thing that the Bruins equipment guys wanting to take care of Rick grabbed his stuff on his way in and carried it for him and blah, blah, blah. Again, I don't want to make too much of it, but it's just sort of a little. Like, here comes a big swinging stick. Here comes a superstar. Here comes a superstar. Here comes Rick Nash. And it's sort of like, I'm fine with it.
So that's not typical behavior.
He improves the team, but when they were talking the last couple weeks about chemistry, this is sort of the thing you're kind of talking about. Now you're adding, oh, here comes Mr. Nash.
Don't you know who I am?
You're going to grab my bags for me, thank you. Like, just a little thing. Again, and when I cover the team, I don't remember. Did they cover their own bags or not? Did they walk with their own? When you got traded, did you walk in with your own bag or not? I don't remember. I have no idea. I haven't thought about something like that ever. But I think that's just sort of like a little thing. It's a little thing. This is not a young kid trying to fit in. This is not a veteran trying to just play a role. Here comes gold medalist, Team Canada, first overall pick, highest paid player on the team, Rick Nash.
I'm not going to read too much into it, only because even if there is some ego there, he's immediately being humbled. You're not coming here to try to save the team. You're not going to be on the first line. You're a second liner. I don't care what your resume reads like. You're not.
So I hope they keep him on the second line. That's another thing. I want them to resist the temptation to move him up with Bergeron. He played last night on PP1. He was on the first power play.
Saw that, yeah.
He was on the first power play with Bergeron and Marchand. And
well, that I like, because that's been kind of a mess.
And as someone mentioned to me, he's been PP1 his entire life. You're not putting him on the second power play now. I'm like, why not? Like, so this is just a little thing. When they talked about chemistry, this is like sort of the thing that I was talking about. On the power play, I don't care. Give them whoever. Mix those guys up however you want. Seriously, I don't care. But as, you know, the role in the regular lines, I want him with Krejci. He fits with Krejci. Resist that temptation. You want more muscle up on the first line? You want put Backus up there then. If Pasternak is screwing off or playing soft or whatever, giving the puck away, you need more muscle up with Marchand and Bergeron, put Backus there. Don't put Nash there. Give Krejci Nash. That's why he's here.
Boy, if they could get Krejci going again. I mean, like he was, you know, four years ago.
When they've made the cup, Krejci's been the guy. Right? He's been the offensive force for them.
Yeah, in both of those postseasons, he was dynamite.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.